Let's lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline and get our weekly view from the middle. Spent the past couple days in Dallas, Big 12 football media days. Some interesting news, much to look forward to. Find his work for usatoday.com. Grab a copy from the newsstand online, usatoday.com. The Twitter handle, at George Schroeder. George, how are things?
Life is good. How are you? We're 6 weeks away and a couple of days from football?
Oh, yeah.
It's actually earlier than that, but for most everybody, September 2nd.
Yep. Tick, tick, tick. It's awesome. And, you know, when you get to this time of year, you take a little vacation here and there, do a little trip, you wake up and practice started, and we're on our way. The human angle. Kansas State coach Bill Snyder is 77. I looked it up. The second youngest FBS coach, Frank Solich, 72. The third youngest is Rocky Long.
You mean oldest?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Oldest. Sorry about that. So he's 5 years older than the second oldest coach, 10 years older than the third, Rocky Long at San Diego State. He was diagnosed 5 months ago with throat cancer. So you were there, George. How's he looking? How's he doing?
Well, look, I saw him 2 months and change ago in Phoenix and sat down with him for an interview at the Big 12's annual meetings in the first week of May, same week that the Pac-12 meets out there. And at that point, we sat up on a veranda and talked for a half hour or so, and I wrote a story about it. I thought he looked really frail and old, older than I had seen him. And it had probably been a year and a half since I'd seen him in person.
Right.
That said, I thought he looked better yesterday as not just from the podium, but as I saw him, you know, throughout the day walking around doing the various duties that you have to do at a media days. And so I thought he looked better.
Whoops. George, you're still there?
You just
cut out for about 3 seconds.
Sorry, it was probably the best 3 seconds of radio we've done in a segment together.
Nice. What good ad lib.
But his recovery, he looked better, and I think that he must be feeling better. He has not directly addressed the results that he got from a June 1 doctor's appointment. I don't know why he won't directly address that, but that's all right. He says he's feeling better and doing fine, and that people are saying good things about him on the medical side, so good. He's going to be 78 in October, I think, and at that point, I think there are a whole lot of people who believe this is actually really his final year. And by the way, from oldest and youngest, as you kept saying, when Oklahoma plays Kansas State, it will be the oldest head coach in the FBS level playing the youngest head coach
right.
in the FBS level after the Lincoln Riley, has become the head coach at Oklahoma.
Wow, that's a 44 years in age separating. Wow. Let's get to Baylor. They had the stopgap coach last year. Now it's Matt Rhule, who's mostly been an East Coast guy. Temple, the Giants in the NFL over the last 10 years. And we just learned of another sexual assault allegation, Trayvon Blanchard. So, I guess, what did Rhule have to say about this? And in general, how heavy was the questioning about, I guess, Baylor's tattered reputation?
Well, first of all, that's an assault allegation, which is different than a sexual assault allegation. Not good, but it was an assault allegation, and it's an old allegation. And what I mean by that is he was suspended, and the news of that was already out there a couple months ago. So that said, anytime anything happens at Baylor, it dredges up every single thing that happened, and it's as though it happened yesterday.
Right.
So, but look, here's the thing about Matt Rhule. He's the perfect ambassador for a school that's image is rightly in tatters. It should be in tatters. And it's going to be a long, long time, if ever, before its image rebounds. But not only is he a good guy for its image, because he's a great ambassador, well-spoken, but he means it. I don't say that about the guy who clearly gets it, understands that there were very real problems at Baylor, and that there are very real correctives that have been applied and need to continue to be applied, and that it's a very serious situation. And here's how you build a culture from the ground up the right way, and then he explains how. And I think it was really impressive as he went about talking to people about that yesterday. But what I what I understand from having talked with different people in and around that situation is he's been implementing all that stuff, that it's not just talk. And so I think that they could not – look, they've got a long way to go. There's a whole lot of people that are never going to give them a break, and I'm okay with that. But they got exactly the right guy to try to do things the right way.
No, I listened to almost all I could hear from what he had to say, and, you know, the sound was good.
I guess what I'm saying is I think it goes beyond sound. I agree with you, but I think the actual good news here is I think it goes beyond sound. Again, that doesn't mean anybody's going to want to give a Baylor a break, and I'm not suggesting anybody should. I'm just saying this guy gets it and wants to do things right. That's all I'm saying.
No, I got it. That's a good take. You know, we're coming up on 10 years since the legendary Mike Gundy, I'm a man, I'm 40 rant. And that was his third year at OSU. Since then, he's 86-31, two major bowls. I've always found him to be incredibly witty with a great dry sense of humor. So when that infamous moment comes up, how does Coach Gundy deal with it, or what does he have to say about it?
Well, he's pretty good with it now. I mean, I don't think he was real good with it before. But here's what he's always said about it, and I think he really means it. It's, look, you know, it was either a laughingstock thing to some people or some people thought it was a bad deal or whatever. He says that with recruits, it has always been a positive. And with recruits' parents, it has always been a positive. And that sounds kind of crazy, but here's the thing. You recall what the topic was that he was ranting about. He was ranting about a newspaper column from the Oklahoman, the Oklahoma City paper, that had, that had sort of, in his mind, unfairly cast aspersions on a quarterback. Now, as it turned out, quarterback essentially was all the things that had been written. But it wasn't the best piece of journalism in the history of the world. We've all written some clunkers, okay? I have, clearly. I mean, you saw my tenure in Eugene. but that said, in his mind, he's taken up for a player who had been unfairly criticized. I would disagree that the player was unfairly criticized, regardless of how well-written or not the column was. I didn't think it was necessarily unfair criticism. But that's what he thought it was. And that's what he says recruits and their parents have always seen it as. This guy's got our backs. And so, you know, in his mind, it was a turning point in recruiting for Oklahoma State and really allowed them to get into homes they weren't getting into. Now, is that the case? I don't know, but he's going to insist that forever. And I think that's kind of interesting. So does he regret that? No. Would he do it again now? No. He says he's matured a ton, and while he might be frustrated, he would not do it that way, which I think is good. I think he's almost 50, I think he's matured some. But he turns 50 on August the 12th, and I think we need to see a reenactment of some sort.
Yeah. The quarterback's name was Bobby Reed, right? Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, there you
That's
go.
That's right.
We're talking with George Schroeder of USA Today. So beyond the rant and the recently trimmed mullet and his overseeing the most successful period in that program's history, you wrote about some of the things he does to promote his program. And man, he's an interesting guy. From what he had printed on their 2016 bowl rings to taking his boys snake hunting, is he kind of the king of unconventional?
Well, listen, I think the king of unconventional resides in Pullman, Washington, in the league that you cover.
Okay.
Yeah, Mike Leach. And then, look, Jim Harbaugh would like to be included in this conversation too, right?
Right.
But is he one of the three most unusual, sort of unorthodox, quirky guys heading a big-time college football program? Absolutely. I mean, look, after those three, I don't even know what the competition would be. Because after those three, the next most quirkiest guy looks like a Stepford wife like all the others. Mike Gundy, the thing that's interesting about him is I think some of it's really authentic, and I think he is just a guy who thought, all right, he's kind of a country boy. I mean, he grew up in suburban Oklahoma City. It's not like he grew up in the country.
Right.
But he's kind of a country boy. They live out on a place a few miles outside Stillwater. I don't know what you call it, a ranch or whatever. And so his boys have grown up riding four-wheelers and doing ranch type, you know, things, right? Gentleman ranch type things, I guess, if you make that kind of money. And you know, I think snake hunting, yeah, that seems like a thing to do. Wearing your hair in a mullet, you know, just to annoy your kids, and then realizing it's a marketing tool, and you know, I think, yeah, that's him. I think some of the stuff he does and doesn't realize it's going to become a marketing hit or a viral thing, but then he's smart enough to capitalize on it when it happens, when he sees it go. And I think that's part of the deal. But some of it is extremely calculated. There's no question in my mind.
No, I like that program. I just like watching him work. A topic
well, he works it.
He sure does. You mentioned Lincoln Riley. We've hit on him a couple times the past few weeks. You posted an article on the USA Today site yesterday. First, he's only been on the job 5 weeks, and as opposed to many coaching changes that happen when one guy gets fired or leaves for another job, he's out. So it seems that maybe Bob Stoops has actually made himself available during this kind of unique transition?
Yeah, and I don't know how often, but I think I was told by some guys that Bob has been around the football complex, the athletic department, a lot because he goes and works out and stuff like that. But then he's been playing a ton of golf. And so I don't know that they've had a ton of conversations, but they've had a few. And he promised to make himself available for Lincoln without being in the way. And I think that's always sort of the delicate balance. And then I think Lincoln would like to use him without overusing him. So they've had a few conversations. I don't know what they've amounted to. And I'm sure they'll have a few more. I think the thing that maybe will mitigate some of that is that Lincoln Riley hired Ruffin McNeil, his former head coach and kind of a mentor, when he was at East Carolina. And then before they were assistant coaches together at Texas Tech, he hired him as an assistant coach, and I'm guessing he will be the sounding board guy who can tell him why this is a good idea or not, and sort of the guy I can really trust when everything else is going wrong. And so I'm thinking that will be the guy he talks with.
Now, I know this is very subjective, but when you think about all the guys you've seen at media days, at the podium, you know, they'll open with a statement, take questions. You know, you've seen Chip Kelly, Mac Brown, Steve Spurrier. From a comfort point of view, how do you think Riley wore it the first time as Sooner boss?
I thought he did pretty well. I thought he did. He's not just a first-year head coach at Oklahoma. He's a first-year head coach ever, so it's the first time he's been in a media days like this. I thought he did fairly well. Look, he is really sharp. There's no question about that. I mean, you don't know how that's going to go as a head coach, but you understand why anybody who's ever talked with him or dealt with him has come away impressed. I was listening to Kirk Herbstreit on the air earlier today on a local radio program. He was a guest, and he was talking about how ever so often you'll run across a coordinator, or he would when he's, you know, he meets with them before games and stuff like that, and you come away, he said, quietly impressed. He said, there's not been one quite like Lincoln Riley. So he did really well at media days, but I would have been stunned if he hadn't.
All right. Final thought for George Schroeder. Incredibly, on our show yesterday, I was actually talking about the Red River Shootout, which, you know, through the 2000s was must-see TV. But Texas hasn't even won 10 games since they lost to Alabama in that championship game after 09. Now you've got Riley. You got a new coach at UT. So does it, beyond having more intrigue this year, how important is it to the league that rivalry remain heated with national implications?
Well, return to being heated with national implications. It's always been heated, but it returned to the national implications.
Right.
Look, I think it's really important to the long-term viability of the league that Oklahoma and Texas, that Oklahoma remains elite or gets back to elite if it's just been on the cusp of it the last few years. And that Texas gets back there too, because if those two bell cows are happy, if they're trading punches, in October on the Cotton Bowl floor, and then potentially again in a rematch in a conference championship game, and if one of them is going to the playoff more often than not, if they're trading that off, then why would they go anywhere when 5 years from now, and you're getting near the end of the TV deals, and you're thinking you're starting to look around, and the grant of rights is going to expire at the same time? Why would you go anywhere? That's a big if, but that would be the best case scenario for the league. And so here you've got Tom Herman, first year at Texas. You've got Lincoln Riley, first year at Oklahoma. And all they're charged with is not only these huge expectations for their own place, but, you know, hey, potentially for the league too.
Just more fun stuff to keep an eye out for when the season starts. So George is off to Chicago for Big Ten Media Days Monday and Tuesday. And like I texted you, if you get there Sunday night, the ESPN game, Cardinals at Cubs from Wrigley. George, I don't know what I need to do, but I'm sending thoughts that you got to go to that game.
Well, look, I don't want to spend a ton of money. And it is, when the Cardinals come to town, suddenly a ticket at Wrigley gets even harder to come by. So can we do like a GoFundMe site and see if the listeners would do that?
Your connections. You can't make a call and get a press pass?
I don't know if I could ethically do that.
Okay.
or if I could just get tickets for face value, that would be great. But, I looked briefly. Some friends of mine who are going to be there at Big Ten Media Days, we've talked about it. We're either going to try to figure a way to get in, go ahead and pay the money for the tickets, or at the least, we're going to do Wrigleyville on Sunday night.
All right. Well,
so that won't be nearly as fun.
I hope it works out.
Ballpark.
That would be cool because, you'd be part of a group who got to see the world champion Cubs at home for the first time in 108 years. So that sounds...
Yeah, listen, I grew up a Cardinal fan, Steve. I don't want to see the world champion Cubs ever.
Okay. Yeah, but you could see maybe on national TV, wreck their night.
Okay, now you're talking. Although... with this batch of Cardinals, I'm not sure that's
enough. Yeah, that's a good point. All right, as always, USAtoday.com, on Twitter, at George Schroeder. George, you travel safe. Look forward to catching up and see what happened Big Ten style.
Yeah, hey, same here. Thank you.
All right, take it easy.